On this episode of Secrets of Staffing Success, we talk about ethics. Do we have it? Do we not? Do we think we have it? But maybe we don't. Today's episode is brought to you by Haley Marketing Group. If you're like most staffing firms, finding good candidates right now is a major struggle. At Haley Marketing, we have a number of tools that will help you recruit both active and passive candidates, drive more traffic to your job board, and increase applications. To learn more, give us a call at 888-696-2900.
Welcome to Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with innovators and thought leaders in the staffing and recruiting industries. Your host for Secrets of Staffing Success is Todd Lewandowski. And now, here's Todd.
Our guest this week on Secrets of Staffing Success is one of the partners at More Essentials. She's Tricia Tamkin. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us on Secrets of Staffing Success.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here. And I would just like to say I'm a huge fan of Haley Marketing. So for all of your listeners, I think you guys do a great job. I've seen some extraordinary results for some of our students. And for those of you out there that are looking to, take the next step, Haley Marketing is the way to go. So let me just throw that big endorsement out there for you first.
Well, all right. Thanks, Tricia. That's all we needed from you. We'll talk to you later.
All right, good.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So before we get into it, I just want to have you give your kind of 60-second elevator pitch on More Essentials and what you guys do.
Sure. What we do is we make headhunters better. We make recruiters better. We teach how to do sourcing, business development, and core recruiting through public courses, private training, and private coaching. We have what's called the Church of Executive Search. That is our private coaching program, which is very selective and a little elite, but where we make the biggest impact.
And how did you yourself get started on this path?
Oh, that's such a fun story. I was 19 years old and answered an ad in a newspaper, which certainly ages me a little bit, right? And the interview was 50 miles from my house. Mm. And I drove out there and I sat down and I met with the owner of an agency. And at the point I walked in, I had never heard of a recruiter or a headhunter, didn't know what the actual job function was. And they explained to me, I think it was the 25% of base salary that got my real attention. but they explained it to me, what a headhunter did. And I decided in that moment, in that interview, that I was going to be a headhunter, that that's what I wanted to do. And so when I left the interview, I came home and I turned down two job offers that I had that were not in our industry. And I called the owner of the agency back in with a little bit of, naivete and said, I am going to be a headhunter. I can either do it for you or I can do it for someone else. Do you want to hire me? And he was like, yes, I want to hire you. And so he took a chance on me at 19 years old with no experience, and I outproduced a 15-person company in my first year.
Wow. That's a great story.
Thanks. What? Little did I know that cold call back in or, sales call back in, I'm doing this. Do you want to do it with me or not? is, something that's hard to teach someone, that kind of attitude, and it's just perfect for recruiting. So I did that for 4 years, and then 23 years ago, went out on my own and started building out my search firm, and I've been speaking, training, and coaching for the last 10 years.
So before we get into the issues and the scenarios around ethics in this industry, give our industry a letter grade right now for ethics.
Oh, that's such a hard thing because it's a good question. It's such a hard thing because my experience has been that we have people on both sides of the spectrum. Mm. So very rarely, I think, do we find people that sit in the middle. Most people either were trained in ways that I personally find are unethical. And so I would give them, you know, an F. And then I would say there's another whole portion of our industry that works very hard to make sure that they're making ethical choices, and I would give them an A. But I don't know if I would give our overall industry a C.
You don't want to meet in the middle there.
I don't. No, I don't. I think there's a real problem in our industry right now. I think that there's a lot. When you have a business like me at 19 years old, I only had 2 years of college. I did not have, it doesn't take a lot to become a recruiter. Now, it takes a lot to be a successful recruiter. But the point of entry into our industry as far as requirements go is really very low. So when you combine the fact that you don't need a lot to become a recruiter, and you can earn easily $100,000 in your first year, upwards of, you know, six, seven, or seven figures, you know, once you have a little bit of experience, I think that's where we see the ethical dilemma show up, right? That it just doesn't take a lot to get into our industry, and it's a very high ticket sale.
Right. So you mentioned starting out as a recruiter, and I'm wondering, in those early days, was there ever any part of your training where you went, this doesn't seem very ethical? Because you mentioned people being trained to be unethical at times.
Yes. Boy, it did happen. And I'm so glad I didn't say where I started. I didn't name that firm because actually the gentleman that owns that firm is a good man, and I feel fondly for him. But yes, I was taught at 19, 20 years old, I was taught that the way to source candidates, because keep in mind, we're going back to the early 90s. Like, I had never used a computer at that point, and I was a tech recruiter. Like, I didn't know what any of it meant. But when you look at that training, what I was taught to do was ruse recruiting. So for those of you that don't know what that is, and that is basically calling into a company and blatantly and aggressively lying through your teeth to get them to give you names of people so that you could recruit. We didn't have, you know, LinkedIn. We didn't have Google. We didn't have, you know, Boolean logic for sourcing. You had to get on the phone and get people to give you names. And so I was taught to call into small software companies. And please let me just preface this by saying, don't anybody do this. Okay, like, I'm going to tell you what I did, but don't anybody do this. I would call into a software company and make up a name, make up a magazine or publication, and tell them that we were doing a profile and that we were going to reference their company in that article, and that what I wanted to do was send a free issue of our magazine to all of their employees, but I had to address them individually.
Wow.
And so I would have companies send me their directories, right, of employees for my fake magazine. Yeah, doesn't feel good. Like, it didn't sit well with me in the moment, but I think I was too young and too inexperienced to know to speak up.
You mentioned, you know, you didn't have social media back then. So do you feel that social media has helped or hurt ethics in this industry?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I would probably want to give it some more thought, but I'll tell you right off the cuff, I think that we have a whole bunch of people that sit behind keyboards and computers, and they feel like they are more anonymous and protected than they actually are. And that does lead to sometimes more poor behavioral choices. Yeah. So I would, if I had to say, I'd say it probably has had a negative impact.
So from what you're saying, it's pretty clear that, you know, the experts out there have been teaching this, you know, as you put it, ruse recruiting, you know, flip marketing, lying to candidates, lying to business owners. Obviously, this has a negative impact on the reputation of this industry. So What do we do about this? You know, both as leaders and as individual recruiters, how do we fix this? Is there a fix?
Well, I think there is a fix. I really do. I think there's a fix. Like, one of the things that we tell everybody in our training, you know, oftentimes as recruiters, because we're dealing with people, no two situations are the same. And you're going to find yourself in a position where either a candidate or a client asks you a question and you don't know how to answer it. That happens consistently in our business. And I think that the first thing, the first commitment that we have to make in order to elevate ethics in our industry is, you know, when in doubt, tell the truth. Like, when you don't know what to say, just be honest. I mean, does that mean that it could possibly negatively impact your deal? Maybe, you know, but we got to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror. And so I think that if first and foremost, we can collectively decide that we're just going to tell the truth, that's going to have a huge impact. But I think there's something else that we can do. We can consciously go through a process where we decide how to make an ethical decision, okay? So there's a step-by-step process that you go through. If you are, first I'll tell you, like if you're asking yourself, Todd, like, oh, wow, is this ethical? It's not. Like, as soon as you, as soon as you're wondering whether or not this is ethical, it's not, okay? Chances are that you have, you know, gone into certainly that gray area, if not a dark place. But we can ask ourselves a series of questions, because sometimes we get emotionally invested in the process and it's hard to see the forest for the trees. Sure. So the first thing that you have to consider is, are you causing harm? Whatever choice you're making, are you hurting someone by making that choice? If the answer is yes, don't do it. Okay, the second kind of in that tier of decision-making questions is, whose interests are you satisfying, right? Whose interests do you have at heart? And if you are not coming from a place of service to either your client or your candidate, if the person whose interests you are satisfying are your own, that is also an indicator that you're teetering on some shaky ground. After that, I like to ask myself, you know, what happened? What would happen in this scenario? If I take this action, what would happen if it became universal? If everybody did whatever it is I'm deciding whether or not I'm going to do, right? Like, if everybody did it, what would the overall impact be if it became universal? So that kind of gives you some perspective. Lastly, you know, you look at your choices for the decision that you need to make, and you have to decide, you know, which action you take is going to treat everybody fairly, treat everybody with dignity and respect. Mm. Now, Todd, we could take that whole thing and boil it down into one big kind of easy question.
I like that. I like summary, when we simplify things.
Right? Let's simplify it. If we take and we summarize this entire situation for the decision you're trying to make, and we put it on the front page of the New York Times, do you feel good about it or are you ashamed? If you feel good about it, make the decision, take the action. If you would feel ashamed or uncomfortable about people knowing about it, then that's kind of your moral compass telling you, don't do it.
Yeah. Let's look at a scenario where, like you mentioned, some gray area. A lot of times it will, you know, like you said, if you got to ask yourself if it's ethical, it's probably not. But there are probably a lot of different tricky scenarios where there is some gray area there. Are there times when you're not contractually obligated, but you are morally obligated to act a certain way?
That's a very, very interesting question. And I do think that there are. Okay. Like one of the ones that comes to mind, we have seen often where you have a situation that, this just happened with one of our coaching clients where she had a client that she made placements with. The last placement, and this is a very current situation. So we're sitting here on Halloween, right? Of 2019, and this is January of 2018 was her last placement. She had made two or three placements, I don't remember, but not a ton with this client. And the last placement she made was January of 18. Now, the contract that she had with the company did not have a non-solicitation clause. There was no non-solicitation. It just wasn't in the contract. So there was nothing that precluded her from being able to recruit people out of that organization. She's allowed to. In fact, contractually, she was allowed to concurrently while she was placing people there because there was nothing in the contract that told her that she couldn't. So fast forward now about 18 months from her last placement, and she has a new client, and that new client, boy, there's a bunch of people at the old client that would be really good fits for the new client. So she's not contractually obligated to not recruit the people, but is she morally obligated not to recruit the people? So that's kind of a dilemma. Like that's a good ethical dilemma, right? I think first and foremost, we can say, and I would say this loud and yell it from the rooftops to our whole industry. If you place somebody into a job and you get paid to place them into that job, you cannot take them out. You can't.
Right.
You can't get not like that exact person, Todd, if I placed you at Haley Marketing, I cannot call you a year or 2 years later and say, hey, Todd, I've got this opportunity for you. Why don't you come over here and look at this other client of mine?
Right.
Like, we can't do that. But let's put that aside. Let's say it isn't the exact person that you placed. It's other people in that organization.
Right.
Is it okay to recruit those people? And I think that that really kind of typifies this idea of contractual versus moral, because I don't think that anybody in that organization would have the expectation that you're pulling people from them. At the same time, it's been 18 months since the last placement. How do we handle it?
Yeah.
Right? So there are often situations that come up that you have to evaluate and make the decision based on your own moral compass, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can give you a right or a wrong answer to that situation.
Sure.
Ultimately, after going through a whole series of questions, many that I've shared with you already, to help her make that decision, she decided that it just didn't make her feel good to do it. And there's an abundance of candidates all over the place. She didn't need to target that company.
We got a little bit of time left. And in that remaining time, what I wanted to do is kind of walk through a couple different scenarios and just get your thoughts on them, how they can be approached and addressed. And let's start with kind of going back to that first question that we talked about. What if your hiring manager wants you to do something that's, you know, a little maybe unethical, maybe a little shady?
It's a challenge, right? Because my inclination, and I'm probably a little bit more straightforward with this kind of stuff, would be to call them out on it directly. Now, if you don't want to do that, like if you don't want to look at your client and be like, huh, Todd, I think that's an unethical choice, and I'm not comfortable with it, there's a softer way to handle it, and it's kind of an escalation with them. So you can say to the hiring manager that you're working with, we can certainly consider that as an option, but before moving forward with that action, I'm going to need approval from your direct supervisor before I can move forward with that. So escalating the situation and basically taking the decision out of your own hands, putting it back into the client organization, and let's make sure that you know, at that point, if the hiring manager doesn't feel like what they're doing is shady, they're going to be like, oh, great, no problem. But if they do feel like what they're doing is shady, they're going to be like, yeah, you know what, why don't we not do that?
Great, great scenario. I like that. This comes up a lot in a lot of the marketing that we do for our clients. We do a lot of MPC, most placeable candidate marketing for our clients, mostly through email marketing and on the web. Can recruiters use fake candidates for their MPC marketing?
Well, I mean, just the word fake should probably answer that question, right? No, you can't. You can't use a fake candidate. Don't start a relationship off with a brand new client. Don't start a relationship off with a brand new client lying. What a terrible way to start that relationship. I don't want you to do that. If you have an MPC candidate, then go ahead and take that candidate to market. I know you guys do that, so I'm not going to give you my spiel about why I don't like MPC marketing. I'll save that. But by God, don't do MPC marketing with a fake candidate. So what? You're going to go to a brand new client that's never heard of you before, say, look at this awesome candidate I have. And then they're going to say, great, I want to interview them. And you're going to be like, oh, too late. Sorry you didn't move fast enough. That candidate's not available anymore. What that does is it damages our entire industry.
Right.
It means that anyone else that wants to do MPC marketing is being hurt by your activity, and I mean you're in the collective hypothetical, not you, Todd, but by your activity, if you're going to MPC market a fake candidate, you hurt everybody.
Yeah, well, at least we agree on that side of things. We might not agree on the usefulness of the MVC, but we agree on that side of things. That's still the same advice we give our clients. Last scenario here. If I know there's a problem at my client, and maybe it's ethical, maybe it's even more than that, do I need to disclose those problems or those issues to prospective candidates?
I think you do. I think it took me a long time to learn this in my career. I don't think I understood this until probably a solid, 10 or 15 years ago. Candidates, there's a lot of candidates out there that when they look at and evaluate an opportunity, they're not put off by the chaos. They're not put off by the problems and the challenges, because it gives them an opportunity to go in and make a giant impact. So oftentimes we think, oh yeah, you know what? Like, there's all sorts of political problems inside of this organization, and there's cliques and catfights, and it's ugly, and the culture is not good. But if I'm talking to a candidate, I can frame that as, you know, my client that needs somebody that's going to be, you know, fairly politically savvy and able to do strong team building. And it's going to be challenging walking in, but the impact that you'll be capable of making on this organization is massive. Is that something that interests you? And you know what? Making a massive impact and making change, instilling change in an organization, is something that, at least at a senior level, I would say the vast majority of the candidates I talk to are excited about. So the very things that we might think are problems, if they're framed appropriately, can turn into selling points for our clients.
She is Tricia Tamkin. She is partner at More Essentials. Tricia, I know there are, you know, a million different ethical scenarios we could go through today. I just wanted to touch on a few of them. But if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best ways to do that?
They can either pick up the phone and call me, 630-830-3000. I actually answer my phone even when I don't recognize the number. Or you can always send me an email to Tricia@moreessentials.com. And Todd, I would like to just leave you with this idea. I'm really passionate. Like, I'm so excited that we're talking about this, ethics in our industry. It's something that I am passionate about. And you watch, in 2020, it is my personal mission to elevate the ethics in our industry. And I'm going to make that happen.
That's a big burden to take on. Are you ready for that?
I am. I'm ready to do it.
Awesome. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us this week on Secrets of Staffing Success.
Thanks, Todd. It was a pleasure to be here.
My big thanks to Tricia Tamkin from More Essentials. If you want to find out more about them, you can also check out their website, moreessentials.com, and it's two O's in more. Look, ethics is one of those things you can talk about for days and days and days, and some people will be on one side and some people will be on the other side. But I like when she simplified things, and it, you know, it's kind of like that old saying, if it sounds like a duck, if it walks like a duck, if it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So the minute you ask yourself, is this ethical? Chances are it probably isn't. And I like the way she kind of brought that all home here. Now, there's like I said, there's a whole bunch of different scenarios that you can look at that aren't so crystal clear. We touched on a few of them there, and I'm happy to have Tricia back on again in the future and talk about more scenarios and kind of role play through those. But again, just break it down very simply. You know, she said, what would happen if everyone did this? That's a great way to look at it, too. I like that thought process where, you know, okay, maybe one or two people do it and it's not great, but it's not going to ruin it. Then, you know, run the tape on it. Let it go down the line. Say, what if everybody in my profession was doing this? Would this be good? You know, if you're leaning towards no, I think you have an unethical dilemma there on your hands. So big thanks to Tricia. We got to run. You can always find Secrets of Staffing Success on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the podcast app on your Apple device, and all of our episodes are at HaleyMarketing.com. We will talk to you next time on Secrets of Staffing Success.